it's easy to sell the first bottle based on a story or based on the package, but you only sell the second bottle based on the taste.
Well, hello there, and welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer and bourbon drinker at Max Podcasting. And you can reach me at max at maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 163, and today's guest is Kenny Coleman. Kenny is the executive producer and co-host of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. And he is also the co-founder of Pursuit Spirits, their own line of bourbon. Yes, he has created a top podcast that goes all in on bourbon and has even created a line of bourbon from that podcast. And you know, I bet that trend will just keep on going and keep on going. Kenny is one of the most coolest and insightful dudes you will ever come across. And in this episode, we talked everything from the Bourbon Pursuit story, how to create a diehard community around your podcast, even automate lots of those behind-the-scenes tasks with your podcast. And we wrap up with a very, 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 very special version of Rapid Fire Q&A, the Bourbon Trail of Rapid Fire Q&A. Stay tuned. It's Kenny goes through the gauntlet, and it will have you flipped upside down. I don't even know what that means, but stay tuned. Before we get started, shout out to my future father-in-law, Gary, who, when we were talking about this episode, and of course I've been hyping up to him because he is a big bourbon and scotch drinker, he thought because he's such a fan of drinking those sorts of things that, you know, there's probably lots of shout outs to him in this episode. So here's your shout out, Gary. Shout out, Gary. It is Kenny C. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with the bourbon unicorn. I just invented a new name for you, Kenny. The man, the co-host and co-founder of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon, as well as Pursuit Spirits. Super, super cool, dude. Kenny, thanks for joining. How you doing today?
Thanks for having me, Max. You know, it's funny you said the word unicorn because in the world of bourbon, unicorns are actually a term that's quite oftenly used because they consider them rare bottles that you would, you know, really hard to find on the shelf and stuff like that. So I'll take the compliment.
Of course, of course. That's just how deep my knowledge of bourbon goes. I work it into my on-the-spot nicknames. So I saw your session at Podcast Movement, was blown away. There's some really cool stuff behind the scenes that we'll go through today about having podcasts, being efficient. And the biggest thing that struck me is that one of your episodes that you do every week has the word quickie in it, and I just found that fantastic. So you're the quickie expert as well. But before we get into all that stuff, out of all the magical potions, elixirs, liquids, beverage, some would just call them alcoholic beverages, in the world, why bourbon?
I had a knack for bourbon early on. I'll kind of give my coming to age tale of how I got into bourbon. And my fascination with it kind of actually started in college. And don't get me wrong, it's not the same idea of like, oh, like what I do today of sniffing it and getting kind of flavors and aromas and comparing them. It was for the effect. Like, don't get me wrong. But it was the fraternity that I joined back in college where every Friday night, people would usually be going and saying like, oh, here's $20, go get me an 18 pack of Natty Light and split that or do whatever. But I remember very vividly, it was one evening where all of the seniors said, we're not doing beer, we're only doing bourbon. And that continued a trend that went on for a few years where we became known as one of the biggest bourbon drinking fraternities on campus. So a lot of our parties were, it was just bourbon. It was bourbon and Coke for the guys and girls. We made, I don't know, some kind of hooch and stuff, whatever it was. But and I only remember this because I was part of the social committee. So I actually remember to a T what we used to do. And this is also, by the way, I went to University of Kentucky. So Kentucky bourbon, but we were also a dry campus, so in air quotes there. So what we had to do is we had to figure out a way of how could we have parties that didn't have beer cans sprawling all over the place. And this was also a time when they had keg tagging. And if you had a party with a keg and it got busted, whoever had that name assigned to that tag got all kinds of, you know, contributing to minors drinking and stuff like that. So what we did is we started putting bourbon and Coke into those massive Gatorade jugs you always see on the sidelines of football games. And that's what people would drink out of. But after college, you know, I had a lot of friends that started going into wine and, you know, other spirits and gin and stuff like that. But I just kept sticking with bourbon. And I started going from, you know, the cheapest bottle that you could get to start finding other things on the shelf and kind of figuring out, like, what do I like and what am I enjoying during this process? And so I would get, you know, I started off with like Kentucky Tavern, going to Verald Barton. And then my splurge was getting into stuff like Four Roses and Small Batch. And that was like a $35, $40 bottle. I was very, very happy with that. And then I ended up having, I would call him my bourbon Sherpa at one point, was somebody I worked with. And he said, you know, I've noticed you're really starting to get into this. Like, let me get you a few bottles for your collection, or you can kind of get. And I said, okay. And so he got me an old Rip Van Winkle back when it was the squat bottle. It was a Jefferson's like 23 year. And I think it was the 2013 limited edition Four Roses small batch. And I said, oh, great. Like, how much do I owe you? And he goes, $100 a bottle. And I was floored. I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't believe I'm about to spend $300 on three bottles. This is nuts. But that's kind of when the bug really bit me and I started going all in on bourbon and discovering the fascination that is really out there. I mean, this was at a time that I didn't even know limited edition bourbons really existed on the shelf. And so between 2013 and 2014, I went from having five or six bourbons on my shelf to around 50 to 60. And it was just trying to figure out, well, what distilleries do I like? What kind of mash bills do I like? And this is going into the part where about, I think late 2014, early 2015 was when my partner in the podcast, Ryan, he was going to start a podcast on his industry, which is turf management. You know, people that go around and spray lawns every day and make them look nice and pretty.
The people that manage turfs.
Yes, the people that manage
turfs. I don't even know if turfs can be plural, but he's doing it.
Yeah. And he was going to start a podcast on that industry. And I think he realized it might have been a little bit of a short runway or it wouldn't have reached a wide audience. And he knew that I was really getting to bourbon. He was from Bardstown, which is the bourbon capital of the world. And he had a friend say, you know, you're from Bardstown. You should do a podcast on bourbon. And he knew that I was into bourbon. And he said, what do you think? And I said, well, let me go and see what else is out there. I like to be the dream killer because I think that if you have a great idea, I guarantee you somebody's already done it or somebody's going to do it better than you. So I went and I looked and I saw there was only like two or three or four different podcasts at the time. And most of them were either business focused or it was a bunch of guys sitting around a microphone sniffing Elmer T. Lee going, oh, it tastes like caramel and vanilla. And I was like, I don't even want to listen to that. So my manager at the time, he runs another successful podcast called the Cloudcast. And he invites startup executives and all this sort of stuff to come on the show and kind of talk about their product and what's happening, sort of cloud computing and everything like that. And I said, that's what's missing is a voice from inside the industry. Like, how do we get people to connect with the brands that they're already drinking? Like, everybody knows the Maker's Mark and has the red wax. But do you know why that's there? Do you know why the iconic red wax is there? Do you know how Bill Samuels Jr. almost took Maker's Mark from being defunct and bankrupt into the powerhouse that it is today? I mean, those are the stories that I really looked at and say, like, we could capture these and share these with the world. And that was sort of the impetus that started Bourbon Pursuit. And now we're, you know, 300 and some odd episodes in of being able to interview all the greats in the industry, including bloggers and authors and other pundits and just fun cultural topics that we like to hit on. And I think that's the greatest thing is that we cover the entire gamut of bourbon. And now that bourbon is such a growing and hot category, we're now starting to see that the podcast really started to explode with listenership and everything like that too. So it's been a fun little rocket ship for the past 6 years now.
Who doesn't like fun little rocket ships? especially when they're filled with bourbon. Maybe like the secret jet fuel is bourbon. But not that you need your credibility established even further, but to paint a bourbon picture here, what does your collection of bourbon look like today?
Oh, gosh. So I would say that it's gotten out of hand to a degree, and that's okay.
that's like the definition of a good problem to have.
When I think about it, is I've got more bourbon now than I can drink in a lifetime, and I'm only 38, so that's a lot of bourbon to still go. And the great thing is like there's new products and more bourbon, and now that we have our own bourbon company, I don't know how I'm going to be able to consume it all. But so like I said, it started off with like 50 or 60 bottles, like going around looking for stuff. And then that's kind of, like I said, about 2014-ish is when the bug really bit me. And I learned about limited editions, and I was going around, I was picking up every single thing I could. And I still have a lot of stuff from back then too. So, you know, over the span of just a few years, it went from, you know, less than 100 to now I think I have a little bit over 800. And it's overwhelming at times, as my wife would say, is that it's choice overload. I think sometimes when you look at it, I've got, you know, you could, if for anybody that was, has ever checks your picture out online, you know, I've got somewhere around 150 to 200 open bottles at any time in my bar. But then I've got the whole back room that's full of stuff. And, you know, another part of thing is being on Bourbon Pursuit and having that is we're considered whiskey media, and people care about what we think about now, which is really weird, because when we first started the podcast, we did it in a way that we did interviews because we're nobodies in this industry. Like, we need to bring the credibility on that people want to listen to. And we always said from the very beginning is we're not going to do whiskey reviews because nobody cares what we think. Well, we were very much wrong. So fast forward 5 years, people were like, we want to hear what you think about a bourbon. And we're like, oh, okay, if you say so. And being part of Whiskey Media, we get media samples sent to us all the time from different distilleries, craft distilleries. They want us to review it and talk about it and try to give them some publicity. And so that's sort of, as you had mentioned earlier, Max, is where the Whiskey Quickies came from.
Yeah, fantastic. One of my favorite like episode series names ever.
Yeah, and it was funny because we said, we can't do what everybody else is doing. You can go on YouTube and you can look at a whiskey review, and sometimes they can be up to like 10 or 30 minutes long. And we thought to ourselves, if you taste something, you know pretty immediately whether you like it or not. So I said, it's kind of like one of those things. I forget what movie it's from. It was Ben Stiller. And they said, oh, you're going to do 8-minute abs? I'm going to do 7-minute abs. And I looked at it and I said, we can do this in under a minute. And that's sort of where the whiskey quickie idea came from, to try to get a whiskey review in under 60 seconds.
That might be Zoolander, or it might be something completely different, but
I can't remember.
It would be really funny if you didn't like bourbon.
Yeah, if I didn't like bourbon, it would be a pretty good pain.
So let's get to Bourbon Pursuit, which you alluded to it a little bit, kind of the origin story there. But it seems like it started really organically, and as you did a little research, you realized that there was a real opportunity for you and Ryan and the guests that you have on to kind of like really carve a niche there and create a voice and kind of become that go-to place that you can hang out, listen, learn about bourbon. You'll probably want to try some by the end of every episode as well. But as you've mentioned, you've been doing it for over 5 years now. You've got over 300 episodes, interviewed all sorts of really, really cool people in and out of the industry, and you've created this crazy madness thing where distillers are sending you bourbon like for free, which is I think the goal of anybody, any sort of podcast or business you want to create in life, is to get alcohol sent to you for free. So well done there. But I'm curious. I mean, you've created an amazing following and community here in the bourbon space. When you look back to kind of how it was in the early days versus how you operate things now, what are some of the biggest changes you made that really helped to help this bourbon rocket ship take off?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about the early days, it's a natural progression, I think, for anybody, especially if you're just getting to podcasting. It's cool for like the first 10, 20, 30, 40 episodes until you realize all the work that goes into it. Max, what we're doing right now, we're talking. This is fun. This is the easiest part of it. It's all the hours that are spent with logistics, planning, making sure that people were comfortable with recording platform. And then you've got everything from editing to publications to, you know, getting it out there on social media. There's tens of hours of work that goes into every single podcast. I mean, sometimes we spend upwards of 30 to 40 hours on a single podcast. So there's a lot of time that's invested into every single one of them. Now, in the early days, it was us just kind of hacking it along and trying to figure out, okay, I know how to cut. I know how to edit. I can throw it in a level later. We'll get it out there and we'll just try to organically try to build something through Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that. Over time, I ended up almost stopping the podcast at one point. And that was because of the time commitment. It really is. It became a burdensome. I was probably spending between my job and the podcast, my actual day job was, you know, somewhere around 70 to 80 hours a week. And I just said, there's not enough ROI. Like, this is not going to take off. We need to probably just go ahead and pull the ripcord on it. But we stuck with it. And we ended up starting to build a Patreon community around the podcasts. And that I always look at as the savior of it, because that allowed us to have some sort of monthly reoccurring revenue that we could really start justifying all the work we're putting into it. But it got to the point where I could then hire my wife away. She was working for Heaven Hill at the time, which is another very large distillery here in Kentucky. And she has a background in video media and production and stuff like that. And I said, can you please come and work on the podcast? And I can focus on my job again, as well as figuring out how to grow our audience and get, you know, keep going bigger. And so that was really the first big initiative of making sure that I could offload some work. So offloading one was the first piece of the sort of growth mindset there. The second is we noticed that everything that we do on the editing side, we were doing much better, because she was able to take our podcast to the next level in regards of quality and content and everything like that. But now we need to figure out, like, how do we grow everything else around it? And so back to what I was saying earlier is that we spend hours just on marketing. Like, how do we continually publish and keep putting it out there and making sure that we get this in front of the right people? And so I started exploring and trying to figure out, well, what are ways to be able to do this? And we were doing it manually at very first, you know, scheduling stuff inside of Facebook Creator Studio and stuff like that. And the idea of automating stuff didn't really happen until I got in, I don't want to say a pickle, but we ended up having some issues with Patreon, or should I say Patreon had some issues with us. Maybe that's maybe the best way to put it.
You can even just say pickle. I like that word as well.
So part of it was, is we created a community in Patreon that was unlike anything else, because mostly creators inside of Patreon, they'll say, oh, we'll give you early access to episodes, or we'll do one-on-one hangouts. Well, within the bourbon world, there is, Max, as you alluded to earlier, the idea of unicorns. And one of these things that are available.
I've been planning that for weeks.
Yeah, you planted the seed, yeah. And so one of these things that happens in the bourbon world is there's this idea of single barrel picks, where you go to a distillery, you choose a barrel of bourbon, and that barrel of bourbon will never be replicated, never be duplicated. It's your bottle, your barrel, and you get, you know, anywhere between, you know, 100 to 150 bottles out of the barrel, depending on how full it is and age and stuff like that. And so we started our own private barrel club as a part of Patreon. Well, Patreon changed their terms overnight that said you can't give access to alcohol as part of a reward. And we had been doing this already for 2 years, and we're like, oh crap, like what do we do? I mean, I was looking at jumping ship, but you know, it's hard. You just can't lift and shift a 800 people at the time to a brand new platform. That's just not going to happen. So I ended up working with the people at Patreon. They're very, you know, very easy to work with in regards to that. We came up with a new solution where we didn't give them access to it, and pretty much everything that flowed goes through a different mechanism through email and other sort of stuff like that. But the idea of actually having to do the email thing and be able to get stuff out of Patreon into a new system, I looked at Zapier. Zapier had a integration with Patreon, and Zapier integrates with 2,000 different SaaS-based applications that are out there. So that really kind of started us going down this path of, okay, well, I'm paying for this service. What else can I do? And that started unlocking a whole suite of things that I realized that I could save a ton of time on if I would just start building some of the automations. And some of it realized that I have a background in software, so I could do some light development and light coding to format stuff. And so now I was able to figure out, once we hit the publish button, there's nothing else we need to do. Typically, if you were to hit the publish button, you've got 10 to 20 other steps of getting it out on every single social media platform, whether that's Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, Tumblr, Pinterest, name 30 other platforms, they're all out there. I figured out a way to automate that. So as soon as I hit publish from WordPress, automation takes over. I don't have to do anything else. And it grabs the featured image, it grabs the links, it grabs the copy, it grabs all that and formats it in the way that seems native to every single one of those platforms. And it doesn't look like it's something that's just, you know, when you go to Instagram and it says, oh, do you want to also share it to Twitter? And you go and do Twitter, and what's it look like? It's your copy and then a link back to Instagram. And you're like, well, that doesn't feel very native.
Yeah, so. That's like the biggest pet peeve on Twitter as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So I figured out that Zapier would really allow us to really make it, you know, simplify the process of you know, of getting it out there. So that was really the first step. Then I realized I could do a lot more things with our Patreon community and automating some of the stuff to when new people sign on to make sure that they get a welcome email from our Barrel Club and all this other kind of stuff. So I figured out a good amount of stuff that I could make it easier from an automation perspective, but at the same exact time, I could make it feel more welcoming without having to put in all the manual effort that would typically have to go into to doing something like that.
Sharing it out on social media is one of the, was kind of the biggest shocks to me as I started this podcast and started sharing it out every week, because big background on social media, like I've posted stuff, you know, for years and years and years, but I think so many people still totally underestimate the time that it takes to like manually post out across every social media platform that you want to be on. So you just kind of describing how you were able to automate like everything after you hit the publish button for your actual podcast, that is like magic and mind-blowing to me. So it's so cool that you did that. Now, I know you have a very high IQ and knowledge in the tech space, and literally like it's, you know, it's been your day job for several years. You're very, very advanced with tech and IT and network and all these words that I don't even know. But for someone who isn't quite as super tech savvy, what would you say is a good way to at least implement automation a little bit with your podcast just to make the process smoother and more fun overall?
Yeah, I mean, I can give you a few examples. I mean, the good thing about Zapier is that you don't have to code to be able to use it. And they have, it's a very easy kind of workflow step by step. And you say, okay, I want to connect this to this. I'm going to take data from here and put it here. The only time you have to do any real coding is if you don't have the data in the format that you need, because you need it to look a certain way, or you're not getting the right data, which is something that we have an issue with on the Patreon side, because there is an integration with Patreon for Zapier. However, it doesn't give you all the details of a member when they're signing up. So I need to be able to take all those details and plug them into, say, our Shopify site and all this other kind of stuff. So it makes it a little bit more of an easier onboarding experience. So that's an easy way to kind of get into the no-code side of things. Another way is that when you look at how do we continue to grow an audience, I know that it might seem outdated, but people still read their emails, and we still have to build an email list. And so building an email list allows you to connect with your users on a more readily basis. And one of the things that I like to do is I set up, and you can do it inside of MailChimp today. You go ahead and you sign up, and I do this with the free version. I don't even pay for MailChimp yet. And you could set up
We won't tell MailChimp that.
Well, it gets to the point, I think, like when you get over 2,000, I think, members is when you have to start paying for something. I think we're at like 1,800. Like we're so
I was
going to
say,
right,
you're probably sitting on 1999, like forever.
it's pretty close. And so we'll have to start paying here soon. But you can set up an RSS template. And what that allows you to do is be able to, as soon as I hit publish, when I say hit publish, I'm hitting publish from a central location. And so you start with a central location. And in our instance, it's WordPress. WordPress becomes our kind of end-all be-all because that has all the content, all the copy. It has your image. It has the iframes for your web player and YouTube. And that can go out wherever you need it. So what you can do is you can set an RSS feed template inside of MailChimp. And what you'll be able to do is you'll be able to say like, okay, like I can start dissecting the RSS feed and be able to say, I know this is what the title is. I know this is the body is. And I can sit here and say, publish at 7 a.m. every morning if it sees something new on the RSS feed. So now what we're able to do is without doing anything, we have a newsletter that goes out twice a week to every single subscriber that says, hey, there's a new podcast episode. Go and check it out. Here's the link. Here's the title. Here's the picture. Here's the show notes. Everything that you would need to kind of entice people to go and listen to that episode. So again, just another kind of low touch way that has a really big impact on being able to, again, just kind of put your podcast out in front of people. You know, one thing that I always love to be able to do, and I think when I did my presentation at Podcast Movement, this is what really stuck with people, is that once you create an episode and you get it out there, it sucks to just like have it live there for the few days that you promote it and then it's off in the ether and you hope that somebody goes and listens to your back catalog. So what I did is I created a whole system that allows us to continually promote old episodes. So by creating a quote unquote database, all it really is a Google sheet with all the information in it that says, this is the episode number, this is the title, these are the show notes, here's the link, so on and so forth. I created another automation that I know the days were usually light on social media because Friday and Saturday, we're usually drinking something. We want to post something.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me you drink.
Well, how weird, right? Yeah. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're posting about the podcast because we want people to go listen to that. And we don't want to overshare and drown stuff. So I usually know that Mondays, Wednesdays, and Sundays are going to be pretty low on our social side. So I know that on those days, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have an automated post go out. And so what this is going to do is it will go randomly take an episode in the back catalog through that sheet and it'll create a tweet. It'll create a Facebook post. If I wanted to do an Instagram post, I could do that as well. And it'll grab one show note, basically one question that I asked with inside of that podcast and kind of have that be your hook. And it says, you know, like, what's the greatest thing about X, Y, or Z today? Question mark, go listen to this throwback episode 25, 250, whichever it is. And here's the link to go do it. So continually promoting old episodes without doing any touch is something that I think is very powerful because I know that when we do these podcasts, like a lot of times we record evergreen content, stuff that is always relevant, no matter whether you're listening to it in 2015 or 2025, like it's still going to be relevant. So continually making sure that we get those podcasts in front of people that may have just found about us, or maybe they started at episode, you know, five episodes back, but they don't really want to go through the whole back catalog. It's funny because I actually got a message one time from a Patreon member. They're like, oh, I really love that episode you did with Eddie Russell back on 74. When you posted it on Twitter, I had to go back and immediately listen to it. And I was like, oh, I didn't post that. Like, that's all an automation thing. He was like, oh, I thought you were sitting there trying to find like the best episodes where people need to go back and listen to. I was like, oh no, it's just random.
the time that would take. That's so nice. That you keep using the word magic, but you're truly a magician with this because so much of this stuff is like, as a podcaster, you're thinking of ways to market your podcast and, oh, we should do this, we should do that. When it comes to the actual time commitment, you know, it could take up all your time and you can basically just push every other task aside if you focus on just promoting old episodes all the time or doing the publishing, things like that. So the fact that you can do that and you've kind of scheduled it to do that automatically and people are discovering old episodes and maybe even discovering your podcast as a whole that way is phenomenal. And I think that's something that hits close to home for me because I realize the same thing with Wild Business Growth Podcast is, oh, I've never enunciated it that way, Wild Business Growth. So many of the interviews and so much of the content is truly evergreen, just like your podcast. And I've always taken a long-term approach with this is, you know, people can discover this 10, 15 years from now in like super old episodes and it will still be relevant. It'll still be inspiring, entertaining. You can learn from it. But really, like at the time of this recording, all I'm doing as far as old episodes go, most of the time is just like hashtag TBT and like recycling stuff for Throwback Thursday and getting it out there, which is great, like, and people discover it that way. But I always felt like there's just so much more could be doing to recycle stuff and get it out there, because you're right, like, as a host, you get so close to everything that you know every episode, you know everyone you've interviewed, you've got great memories from it and can recall stuff from it. But for the average person out there that at least knows about your podcast, they probably don't know every single episode. They might not even know that, you know, stud you interviewed 20 episodes in. So there's so much you can do with it. I like the system you've created. And I want to hit on Patreon, because I think you've gotten some really awesome approach and seen some awesome results there. And for anybody who's not familiar, Patreon, in simplest terms, is a paid membership opportunity where people can actually go support your podcast and you can offer perks and special things. I'll save the full explanation from you, but what would you advise any podcaster who's thinking about using Patreon? What can they do to really create an awesome community on Patreon like you have?
Yeah, I like your description. I've always said it's a mix of NPR plus Kickstarter, where you get to go and
NPR-er.
Yeah. And so you get to kind of fund your favorite grassroots entertainment, and you get some stuff in return. So the way that, again, for us, we started off with a need of like, okay, how do we create something that's unique? Or we started off pretty much copy paste of what everybody else does. Oh, we'll have access to, you know, unreleased content and all this other kind of stuff. And then I realized how much effort goes into creating unreleased content and having to get out there and have this own separate feed. And I said, okay, this is not going to happen. So ours really kind of, we stumbled upon accidentally and having something unique. And of course, ours was the Private Barrel Club, getting access to unique whiskeys that nobody else can get and has our sticker on it. We invite people to come to the barrel selections with us as well from the Patreon community, which for most people, sometimes it's a once in a lifetime experience where they're really getting to bourbon and now they get a chance to go and select their own barrel. So you would have to really think of what matters to you and your community. What do they see value in? And is that value one-on-one communication with you? Is that value something that is in a physical form? Is that something that you can put into an experience? And I think if you can combine those three, you're going to find something that's going to work very, very well for you. Again, for us, the name was bourbon, right? So it made sense to just kind of get some unique access to bourbons. And don't be wrong, we've had our own hurdles along the way because everything we do still runs through a three-tier system and a retailer and all this other kind of stuff. So we follow all the rules that we have to, you know, by law to make sure that this all works. I'm very thankful that we have such a successful program and that's what it's built off of. And I think it was 2 years ago, we were doing like, I don't know, 25, 30 barrel selections a year. And there's a lot of logistics that go into it, a lot of planning, everything that you do for actually setting up the pick to then distributing it and making sure that people have access to purchase it and all this other kind of stuff. And I realized, oh my God, I'm spending so much time on this. And so we ended up, quote unquote, hiring somebody from our Patreon community to now manage it. And so he runs and manages our single barrel program. So I am able to focus on other ways to help grow the podcast, grow the community. And now we kind of, some of the things that we put, you know, that we've laid down are now being self-managed by the community itself. So it's really awesome to kind of see that, you know, Patreon's one of them, making sure that you're always talking to them. You know, we've got an integration with Discord through it. We have our own mods in there that take care of everything inside there. So I don't have to mod it, anything like that. So making sure the community is engaged and they're interactive and you provide the value, and you providing the value of the community, I think, is a big thing. And I've really seen that. I'm so thankful because every Friday we have what's called virtual happy hours, and there's a lot of people on Discord that kind of get together and really make it happen. And all the time, I always say how I appreciate all the people that are inside there. And they always say they appreciate me, that I'm able to help build this community. And now they are amongst new friends and people that they didn't have connections with before. And so you kind of create this own little sub network in your community. And so it's really great to kind of see that happen too. And, you know, kind of hits you in the feels.
If your feels in a podcast might be right for you, or your brand, your company, however you want to do it, any way you slice it. As Kenny has alluded to and detailed, there's a ton of work that goes on behind the scenes to make a podcast a success, even if you're having fun drinking bourbon along the whole time. If you're interested in creating a podcast for your brand, whether that be company brand, personal brand, but you don't want to deal with all those minute behind-the-scenes details and that huge time commitment that comes with having and running a successful podcast, hit me up at max at maxpodcasting.com. I will help you save time with your high-quality podcast. Take a load of that off your plate. We can also talk bourbon or dad jokes or other, pretty much those two things, but some other things as well. Anytime you want, email me at max at maxpodcasting.com. We will save time with your high-quality podcast and bring that thing to life. Now for a little bourbon bait and switch, as it's known in Kentucky. Let's get to a fan favorite segment called Bourbon. No, I'm just kidding. Called Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
The Wild Business Shoutout of the Week.
Wild Business Shoutout of the Week. This is where you talk about a creative marketing campaign, something that cut through the clutter. And for you, of course, I'm sure you've seen some fascinating creative or kind of buzz marketing approaches in the bourbon space. There's something in particular with Blue Run Spirits, a collab they did that was super cool, really got off on the right foot, if you catch my drift. You mind sharing what that is?
Yeah, so I've had the pleasure of talking to the people that own and manage Blue Run, and at first, everybody was kind of really confused about, like, why do they charge such a high premium price point for their product? Because one thing, I don't want to get too deep into about the source world of whiskey and buying barrels that come from other distilleries, because we do that too. And they were coming out with a product that had this super premium price tag, like $100, $150 a bottle. And it was from the same products that you would see that, oh gosh, so you can get some of these sometimes for $30 a bottle. Well, out of nowhere, they started taking off. And I can take that back to two things. One is they hired a great person to do their blending that is really well renowned and known in the industry, who's Jim Rutledge. He's a former master distiller at Four Roses. So you have one there. But then it's the marketing side of things. And how do you make a splash, and how do you make something look different amongst the clutter of bottles that are on the shelf? You go to a liquor store and you look, and you can just look for days. And a lot of them, they still feel common. You have this idea of, like, it's all very masculine, very traditional script writing and all this other sort of stuff on it. Well, they took a completely different approach. They ended up working with one of the Nike designers that created Air Jordan and asked him to create the bottle design. And it was probably one of the greatest marketing ventures ever, because when you think of bourbon, you think of masculinity, you think of all these things. Well, they have a blue Viceroy butterfly emblem on the front of their bottle, and that's what it's known for. And that has been something that people look at and they're like, oh wow, like, it somehow, it really connects with a lot of people. And now their products are flying off the shelves. They just had a release, I think a few weeks ago, and they sold 1,000 bottles in under 40 minutes. It's just one of those things that people are really gravitating towards it. And it's the brand, it's the bottle, it's, and the whiskey's good too. Like, don't get me wrong, that's part of the story too. But I think people look at it as it's becoming a symbol of what they have in their collection now.
I think when you put Air Jordan on anything, it's bound to be a success or create some buzz there. But I love this example because it goes back to any sort of product you have. Like, if it's sitting there on the shelf, or if it's, you know, you're just talking about competing, standing out in the social media space, whatever you can do to differentiate and just create something a little special for somebody is what can make the difference in somebody actually paying attention to you and becoming a customer supporter of you. And in the bourbon space, it blows my mind because, like, actual bourbon, the whiskey, a lot of times can be similar color. And the product, like, if you put them in, you know, you do the blind tasting or you do it and put them in naked bottles, like, I would guess that the average person wouldn't be able to tell too much difference if you're looking at a bunch of naked bottles in a row. It kind of puts in perspective of this bottle, the artwork, the packaging, whatever, you know, whether you hire a Nike designer or whatever you do, it's fantastic real estate to stand out. And so you can take that approach of doing cool collabs like that and leveraging, you know, I know there's a lot of celebrities in the bourbon space, just like any other industry, or just big names that you can partner with to get the word out. Something like that can create a lot of traction for you and a lot of sips. We're going to wrap up with something a little bit different today. I'm going to call this the Bourbon Trail.
The Bourbon Trail
of rapid fire Q&A. So, of course, all these rapid fire questions are strictly about bourbon or in the bourbon space, which I do for every guest. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm doing it just for you.
I'm feeling special.
All right, let's do it. We're going to do 10 questions, the Bourbon Trail rapid fire. You ready for it?
Let's hit it.
All right, let's get wild. Number one, what is your favorite distillery tasting room experience of the distilleries that are in downtown Louisville?
Oh, in downtown Louisville. I like how you specified that. Old Forester. And that's because they have a brand new experience that if you want to go, you can do an entire basically bourbon distillery tour in one location. They even have their own cooperage where they build the barrels and char them right there on site, which nobody else offers.
I love that. I was fortunate enough. Some of my dad's side is from Louisville area in Jeffersonville. And we did Old Forester, we did Rabbit Hole, we did some of those. But Old Forester is just so cool and so old. But that barrel coopery, is that what it's called? The coopery?
Yeah, cooperage. Yeah, that's what they call it.
I was close enough. Yeah. But yeah, it's awesome. All right, number two. What is a tip that will make your bourbon collecting journey even more enjoyable?
Don't get caught up on limited releases. Don't try to fight and find Pappy. Don't waste your time thinking that it's the grain of the gods that you have to just, that you have to try. You have to have Pappy. You don't have to have it. I guarantee you when you try it, you'll be like, okay, that's cool. Like the heavens aren't going to open for you. So focus on attainables and other things that are unique, like single barrel picks that you can get from local stores and make sure you support them as well.
All right, number three, what is the highest proof or most proof? I don't know what's grammatically correct, but highest proof bourbon that you've enjoyed.
I was like, I could probably pull it from behind me. I had the opportunity to have the master distiller from 1792, Danny Kahn, on a podcast, and he came over here to my basement studio, and he brought some barrel samples, and I believe one of them was 161.2 proof. That is the highest proof I've had. Usually, barrel proof is somewhere around 120 to 135 for most distilleries because entry proof is 125, and it fluctuates over time depending on the warehouse. But this one, like I said, 160 proof plus, like I had never seen that before. And so, and oddly enough, it didn't burn. It didn't really hurt at all. So it was actually quite enjoyable.
Damn. I bet you're really good at doing the math of dividing by two and multiplying by two because of the proof and alcohol thing. All right, number four. What is a bourbon that is pretty widely available that you think for somebody that just wants to go to For somebody that just wants to go to their local liquor store and eat licorice. No, I'm just kidding. And buy a bottle of bourbon that's pretty good bang for the buck and it's just a good time. Is there one that comes to mind?
Oh, I'd love to promote my own here called Pursuit United, but we're only in six states and online.
Hey, that's six states more than the average bourbon. Actually, that's just six states more than the average person. We'll call it that way.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, oddly enough, a lot of distilleries are just in their backyard. Most of them aren't distributed in more states than their own. So yeah, we've got our own. So if you're in those states, go check it out. But I would say one of my favorites that has come out in the past probably 2 years, and I think they're in 30 some odd states now, is Four Roses Small Batch Select. And I think it's around $50 or $60 on the shelf, and it's phenomenal. I love that bottle.
Number five, what is the most unique flavor or maybe just ingredient that you've ever come across in a bourbon?
So there's a lot of things that people are doing to make themselves differentiate in the market. And you see stuff like chocolate malted rye and you see stuff like that. But I think that one that has recently come out is we see people distilling with brown rice.
Huh.
I'm not going to say it's like the best tasting thing in the world, but you see interesting things that people are testing the waters with.
Yeah. The couscous bourbon I was just drinking was, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. There's probably a quinoa bourbon that'll come out at some point.
There probably is. Yeah. Oh, there you go. You just open the doors for all sorts of grains and what do they call them? Ancient grains, all those. Number six, what is your best tip for avoiding a hangover?
Water, water, water.
Wait, I said one tip, not three tips.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're going to get away from not drinking water. You still have to drink water and just pace yourself. There's always going to be more bourbon that you can drink tomorrow. We like to do when we sample and taste stuff because when we have a lot of people over, we have 10, 20, 30 bottles out. And so we do what's called vapor pours. And so they're really, really tiny pours. It's just enough that you can kind of get a taste and a flavor, but you're not sitting there like really going overboard or overindulging, I guess you could say.
It's amazing how much of life's problems can be greatly minimized with water. Like hydration is so key. And so in your space, I imagine that there's probably a good like bourbon to water ratio of drinking that you need to keep up to make sure you got to keep your good head.
Keep the liver going, yeah.
Exactly. All right, number seven, other than your own Pursuit Spirits Distillery, what's a distillery you've been to? This one doesn't have to be just in downtown Louisville. It could be anywhere. I guess anywhere in Kentucky. That was maybe the coolest place you've ever been.
It's got to be Buffalo Trace. I mean, they have a lot of history. They've got what they call Bourbon Pompeii, which is where they dug up, basically discovered parts of the distillery that had been underground for hundreds of years, because that name has changed over, gosh, I don't know, long, long time. It's changed a lot of names. It's changed a lot of hands. So there's a lot of good history that happens there at Buffalo Trace. And then I'll also throw a second one in here because it just came to mind, is to go and check out Castle and Key. That is right down the street from Woodford, Kentucky, or down from the street from Woodford Reserve. It is the original castle that Colonel E.H. Taylor built. And it is literally walking through history. It is some of the most iconic and coolest things that you'd see. So definitely make sure you go and check them out.
I appreciate your knowledge of all the like names in just bourbon history as well. You got, and there's a bunch of just kind of like acronyms. You clearly do your homework. Speaking of homework, we're in the home stretch of the Bourbon Trail of Rapid Fire Q&A, which I'm currently trademarking as we speak, but only a few more. Number eight, is there a quick horror story you can tell of like a spilled or shattered glass of bourbon?
I don't think I can give one of a spilled or shattered glass, but I can tell you a horror story of making the wrong decision on a purchasing mistake.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Let me rephrase the question. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I've been very careful with every bottle that I get. I hold it by its neck and, you know, underneath the base too. So it's like cradling a baby. But back to like my early hunting days, back in 2014-ish time frame.
And just to clarify, you mean bourbon hunting, correct?
Yeah, I mean bourbon hunting, yes. And so back in that day, so there's this other release that comes out every year called Michter's 20 Year. It's from Michter's Distillery. It's a 20-year-old bourbon. It is some of the best whiskey I've ever had now that I've had it. But the first time I had it, or should I say that I was at a store and I knew that they just got it. I go and I see it on the shelf and I'm like, you know, like hands are shaking. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. But I didn't know what it cost. I had no idea. I'm very numb to it. I go to the checkout counter. They ring it up, $500. And I'm like, oh gosh, like I can't hide this one from my wife. Like $500 bottle of bourbon. Like I just bought my first $100 bottle like a few weeks ago. Like I can't sit there and do this.
At that rate, you're spending like your lottery winnings.
Pretty much. So I painstakingly give the credit card to the lady at the counter. She goes, swipes it. And I go and I sit in my car and I sit there for probably 10 or 15 minutes contemplating, like, can I really afford to keep this? And I go and I return the bottle of bourbon and I get my money back on my credit card. And nowadays I look back and I'm like, that was the dumbest thing I've ever done, because those bottles are worth somewhere around $3,500 now. So,
oh man,
it was, yeah, kind of like kicking myself in the butt for that one.
It's all right. Fortunately, there's plenty of other bourbons that you have and you've tasted over the years as well. So it's not the one, but maybe it is the one in your heart. All right. Number nine, what is your favorite food to pair with bourbon drinking?
I love to do chocolate. Chocolate is just one thing that, it's one of those things that I've now been able to kind of harness my palate, and I come down to the basement and it's like, what am I in the mood for? If I want something chocolatey, I know what kind of bourbons are chocolatey. If I want something that would go well with like a country ham or a prosciutto, I know what's going to go with there. So I kind of typically go between chocolates and meats is kind of my way, because I'm a big charcuterie board fan. So anything that you could stick on a charcuterie board, I could probably pair it with it.
Charcuterie and cooperages. that did not come out right. We'll just pass on that. But all right. And the last one, you made it. And can't believe it. This is probably the most stressful thing you've ever had to deal with anticipating this question. But number 10, what advice do you have to share for anybody that wants to start a line of bourbon or just any sort of alcoholic line for themselves? Because you've gotten into that space and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of know, and I can just talk mostly from experience on the whiskey side of things, is that when you get into this, just know that it is a front-loaded heavy cost. When you're buying barrels on a source market or you need to go and contract distill, you are looking at tens of thousands to millions of dollars every single time you do this. So currently right now, like we're raising close to like $1.27 million a year to help fund everything that we're doing. We didn't think that we were going to go down this path, but now we're here and we're making it happen. So we've got our roadmap to 2030 kind of all mapped out at this point. But just kind of know that when you get into this, is that it is front loaded. It is not something that is for the weak of heart, and you have to have some deep pockets and making sure that you have a story. I think that's one of the things that is missing, that people want to try and capitalize on the whiskey gold rush that's happening right now. And you see new bottles, new brands pop up every 2 or 3 days, it seems like. But those bottles will not sell unless you have a good story attached to them, or they won't sell unless your whiskey is actually that good. Because if you're going to think you're going to package up 2 to 3 year old MGP and it's going to go out there to market and you're going to make $1 million, better think again, because it's easy to sell the first bottle based on a story or based on the package, but you only sell the second bottle based on the taste.
Ooh, I like that. Words to live by. Well, you and Co. have created a fantastic footing and background and community to build something like this off of. So I'm sure you'll see more and more success. But clearly there's lots and lots of hard work that goes into it. So sending you the best there, we'll definitely have to help out with some purchases there. But Kenny, thank you so much. This was amazing. You've officially completed the first ever Bourbon Trail of Rapid Fire Q&A in Wild Business Growth Podcast history. So that's a very esteemed, we'll have to reward you with a bottle of bourbon from Pursuit Spirits. But thank you so much. This is really, really cool hearing your story, kind of everything from the podcast side, the non-podcast side, but all things bourbon and beyond. Where is the best place for people to check out Bourbon Pursuit, to try out Pursuit Spirits, and anything else, any sort of other CTA you want to work in?
Yeah, for sure. So thanks again, Max, for having me on. I always love getting an opportunity to kind of share our story, because I feel like it's unique and it's different and it's bourbon. Bourbon's fun. It's a fun category to kind of play in. So if you want to learn more about brown water and you want to get smarter about bourbon every single day, go ahead and when you're on your podcast app, go ahead, type in the word bourbon and you'll find Bourbon Pursuit. We'll hopefully be the first result up there. Go ahead and subscribe and follow. And you can find us there, of course, online at bourbonpursuit.com. And we're on all the socials at Bourbon Pursuit. And if you want to try what we're building, or, you know, it's funny when you talk to, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of other podcasters too, and people are like, oh, I wrote a book, or I do seminars and do classes. And we're like, oh, we'll create a bourbon. Like that's a cool way to kind of create another line of income, right? If you want to learn more about our bourbon and where you can find it, you can go to pursuitspirits.com. We have our flagship offering called Pursuit United, which is our small batch product. It's on the shelves in Colorado, Illinois, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, and Kentucky. And it's also online, can be shipped to about 30 some odd states at sealbox.com. And we also have single barrels that we still put out under another line called Pursuit Series. And a lot of those are available on Sealbox, but you can always just go and get the latest links and what's available by going to pursuitspirits.com.
It's beautiful. You're truly pioneering in the space and within multiple spaces. So thanks again. Last thing here, final thoughts. Stage is yours. It could be a line. It could be kind of words of wisdom when it comes to bourbon, whatever you want. Send us home here.
So one of the things that I'll encourage people to do is, as I said before, don't go chasing Pappy, but to try and find what you like. There is so much to learn about the world of bourbon that you can go and you can read a label, you can grab a bottle. And I know don't get me wrong, I think Buffalo Trace is a great distiller. They make some of the best whiskeys on the market, but people get really hung up on chasing and finding a bottle of blends. You don't need to find a bottle of blends. There's so many good bourbons that come from so many great distilleries in Kentucky and outside of Kentucky. Make sure you expand your horizon. There's some coming from Seattle and Florida, New York, and stuff like that that we've been blown away with. And I think you're going to see an abundance of great bourbon on the market here in a few years from a lot of craft distilleries. So make sure that you don't get caught up in trying to just always chase the hype, but you are always continually learning and wanting to find out more. And if you want to learn more about all these brands and you want to be smarter about brown water, make sure you follow us too.
Perfect. And I was thinking to mention something earlier, but I know you went to UK. I went to IU, so I was going to mention something about Christian Watford, but I would never do that. So it goes in every time. Thank you so much, Kenny, for sharing your bourbon story, thank you for sending me all 800 bottles of your bourbon as well, as very over the top kind. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild and maybe tasty stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite podcast app and tell a friend about the podcast. Even maybe share some bourbon with them as well. Maybe some Pursuit Spirits bourbon. Hint, hint. Wink, wink. Podcast, wink, wink. You can also find us on Good Pods, where you can listen to any episode and also see podcast episode recommendations from your friends and other really cool people out there. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!